Pillow again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand-waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and most importantly, baneful bitchcraft. Hello, friends, and thank you so much for tuning in today for episode 78 of the show, Baneful Bitchcraft, the beginning of a series of episodes where I talk about the formerly taboo topic of hexes, curses, and magical acts to cause pain or misfortune in the lives of others. Today we're going to talk a little bit about this type of magic, where it comes from, why it's used, and finally how to create a curse or hex for yourself. I'm so super excited for today's episode. The topic of baneful magic is one I've become just a little bit obsessed with this year, which isn't surprising considering how 2020 is going, right? But it's always been a topic that I've wanted to learn more about, but until recently, it wasn't something you could find like really reliable information on. Certainly not like modern practical ways of casting curses and hexes, because, you know, we don't do that. For decades, modern pagan witchcraft has leaned heavily on these ideas like the rule of three, or some ethical rule that says magic can never be used to harm, kill, control, or just do bad by somebody. If you do, there will be consequences, like that negative energy bouncing back onto you times three. Not every witch ascribes to this, and honestly, if you do, that is totally okay. But it was the general consensus for quite a long time. As such, you didn't really find books that mentioned that type of magic any further, and some Wiccan writers I read when I was young really equated cursing and hexing with, like, Hollywood's version of witchcraft. You know, this idea that no one really does that, cursing is silly, of course we don't stick pins in dolls, you know, that's just ridiculous. Any books that mentioned them were very associated with, like, you know, occult demonology, Aleister Crowley, the Masonic vibe. That just isn't how I roll. No hate, it's just not my style. That stuff's still super interesting, but it wasn't what I was looking for. There was a book that I had wanted to read for years. It came out in 2007, but it was out of print and hard to get by the time that I heard about it. And that was Utterly Wicked by Dorothy Morrison. That book was re-released by Wiser Books this year, and I snatched it up the second the ebook was available, and I read it in like a day. I was so excited about it. You can find the review on my website, actually, and I'll put the link in the description for the episode. I gave it 4 stars out of 5, which means I really loved the book and am very glad I bought it. There are spells for all sorts of purposes and, you know, with a wide variety of ingredients, and throughout she tells you how you can personalize the spells and rituals to suit your purposes. And then it has recipes to make ritual tools like oil blends and incenses and even like coffin nails. It really is, like, the first book I recommend starting with if you're interested in baneful magic. Baneful magic, isn't that great? It's so poetic of a phrase. I've always really loved it. Bane is an old English word meaning poison, you know, toxic. It was pretty popular with Shakespeare, who ascribed it to it a whole bunch of meanings. Like, you know, it could describe your inner power that kind of comes from a dark place. It could mean your feelings of anger and pain and jealousy and hatred. You know, it's something that would eat through you slowly. Baneful magic is just that. It's often born from anger, pain, and it's meant to eat through the one who did you wrong. Sometimes it includes what we call baneful herbs, like poisonous datura or belladonna, but not always. I think it's the perfect term for casting curses. Not only because it describes the curse, of course, but it also describes your reasons for cursing. You know, if you're carrying anger and pain around with you, it will eat you up eventually. It is poison. Casting a curse extracts that poison and sends it where it belongs, so that you, the spellcaster, can then heal. It's been a while since we've talked about the insidiousness of chronic positivity in spirituality, although it is one of my favorite topics. But the overall, you know, ban on baneful magic really is a part of that problem. It's a way of encouraging you to disregard or to push aside these uncomfortable feelings rather than letting yourself feel them. You have to feel anger and pain and sadness so you can understand it, so you can honor those feelings and begin to heal and move on, or whatever it is you need to do. That's not to say that you have to cast wicked curses to do that, of course. Baneful magic is simply a tool at our disposal. Only you can decide if it's one that you want to use, and there's really no wrong answer. You also don't have to cast curses to be interested in it, to want to learn more about it, how it works. It's always good to learn something new about witchcraft, you know, see it from a different practitioner's perspective. Before we get into the, you know, the super fun practical applications of baneful witchcraft, let's look at the history of this particular branch of magic. I say that, of course, but the truth is, as usual, this topic is humongous. It's so huge. Curses, hexes, and bad magic exist in history and folklore all the very, very way back. The types of curses and how they were used varies across cultures and places and times. The history of casting curses is, it's just really, like, entwined with the history of humanity. You know, we're a very emotional animal, aren't we? Our emotions have so much sway over us, over our actions, over our beliefs, and they can even, you know, affect the other people around us. As such, because of that, you know, there's no detailed timeline of the history of curses and types and methods, though I would totally read that book. So let's talk about some of, you know, the big ones. The most notorious historical curses are those of ancient Egyptian pharaohs in the tombs. Back when King Tut's tomb was excavated, the mysterious deaths that worked on the dig really fueled these theories that there was a curse on the tomb to punish anyone who had disrespected the pharaoh's resting place. Now, let's be real. Some of those people did die very suddenly, and some even mysteriously. But others lived into old age and even, you know, achieved success afterward. So it's a little uneven there. Of course, the rumor that the tomb was cursed in the first place was actually started by the men on the dig. They figured it would keep the press out. They wanted to scare them out of, you know, barging their way in. And it worked. But, you know, of course, the press runs with that. It gets huge. Whether or not they actually spun that yarn, the ancient Egyptians did use magic and spirituality to offer protection to the pharaoh's tombs and even punish those who dared to disturb or steal from them. They used etchings and carvings on the sarcophagus. They painted murals on the wall that, you know, some told the story of the royal person that was being entombed there. Others would help guide them safely through the afterlife. Some, it featured their greatest moments so that they would remember them as they went through the afterlife and had to tell their story. Stones like malachite, lapis lazuli, and Libyan desert glass, which is formed from meteorite impact, were used to offer protection, wisdom, and spiritual strength to the spirit of the pharaoh. The real purpose of these wardings and this, you know, spiritual protection was to prevent dismantling the very intricate death rituals that the Egyptians took part in, because these rituals were said to guarantee that ruler, because this was always a royal person who had these large tombs full of treasure and curses, right? Poor people didn't get buried there. So all of these rituals that they took part in to honor the death ceremony were said to guarantee that person a happy place in the afterlife. Items like the actual person's heart, because they were mummified, and any sort of books of the dead, any sort of writings that are personal to that person and their death journey. They were locked in stone or metal containers. Some were made of bone, to make sure that they couldn't be stolen or destroyed before the king had made it past the heart weighing ceremony. You know, they have to go to the ceremony of Mayat. They have to weigh their heart against the feather of truth and justice. They have to make their confessions. And they want to make sure that everything that that person needs to accomplish that is there when they need it. So the curse really would have kind of a timestamp, kind of an expiry date, though no one could possibly know when that is, right? But in general, any sort of curses there were a lot less about, you know, bringing death or a plague on others, and more about protecting death for the deceased. The Bible is also full of curses. Oh, the Bible's full of curses, cast either by God or by other kings or, you know, holy people. There's curses all over the place. Many in the Bible are ancestral or generational curses. So it's a curse that affects a family line versus simply an individual. And we're going to talk more about that, you know, as our series continues throughout the next few months. The Christian God wasn't the only one casting curses, though. Many ancient people called on their own local gods to curse or to harm their enemies in like a really common fashion. Like, we all just curse people all the time. These, like, you know, the one-off kind of under-the-breath curses, you know, the equivalent now would be go fuck yourself or the like. The curses themselves don't change. It's just more about, like, the deity that's being beseeched or the language that changes. There are also cursed objects. Something that affects a target as long as it's near them, touching them, or in their home on their property. Some objects are cursed on purpose. You know, the object is imbued with hatred or with dark magic and given to someone to bring that energy into their life. Other cursed items were things that were present during a really significant moment of grief or anger, and became cursed to anyone else who came in contact with the object. So like a doll that a child was holding at the time of its violent death could become the host of the child's soul, and that, you know, curses all the people around it or who hold the doll. The painting of an artist who committed suicide, and the painting depicts his grief and depression, infects everyone in the home with the same feelings for as long as anyone hangs it up. If you travel to Australia and you visit Uluru, the sacred rock or mountain to the Aboriginal people, if you take a piece of this sacred site away from where it belongs, this can bring misfortune or even death. And this is a big one because a lot of terrible white people obviously do that for some stupid ass reason. So don't chip off a piece of sacred land, please. But those are fairly common throughout the world. You know, replace sacred site in Australia with a sacred site in anywhere in Europe or in Africa. If you disturb it, if you disrespect it, if you don't respect the sanctity of that site, it brings misfortune on you. I think a lot of cursed objects, I think that's interesting. Because it's really, especially these ones that are created, you know, on the fly, it's just a very large concentration of energy that becomes, you know, attached to an object. And I know from experience that grief and depression really can feel like it's pouring out of you when you find an outlet, like painting or writing, for example, or when you go through these, like, these really intense anxiety-inducing moments, any sort of breakdown, psychosis, it's just a lot comes out. I've definitely got paintings and things that I've written when I was in this kind of frame of mind that I don't hang up. I don't really want to look at them, but I don't really want to get rid of them either. They're important. They're just not something I want to see all the time. Maybe one day they'll become cursed objects. Wouldn't that be fun? Another type of curse you all might be familiar with is the evil eye, or the malocchio. This is a Mediterranean curse that you find throughout Italy, Greece, and Turkey. So beautiful. The cobalt blue glass eye talismans that you see, these are Turkish. They're called the Nazar. And then us Italians have our own talismans and gestures, and they resemble horns and chili peppers, which is really fun. Don't tell the ghost of my noni. But I have to admit that those blue Nazar charms are my absolute, they're just my favorite thing. They're so beautiful and striking. You know, that color of blue really is special. It really stands out. It has a power all its own. Just saying. So the evil eye, this is a curse. It's often cast unconsciously and born out of jealousy or malice. We used to say giving someone the stink eye. It's the same kind of thing. Again, you just have this, you know, this large amount of emotional energy, and then you kind of throw it at somebody with your look, with your eyes, with your energy, sometimes by touching. Lots of Italians actually think that being too boastful invites the malocchio from others, and so it's better to keep pride to yourself. And some of that means you don't want to, you know, you don't want to boast too much about how beautiful your child is, lest someone get jealous of that child and, you know, cast the evil eye on them. Just things like that. You can also, of course, cast it consciously if you want to. If you want to learn more about it and about how to diagnose and how to, you know, remove the curse of the evil eye, I highly recommend Italian Folk Magic by Mary Grace Faroon and Honoring Your Ancestors by Mallory Vaudoise. Those are my two favorite books on, it sounds weird to say, but modern Italian folk spirituality. Now, this last historical curse hasn't really enacted any revenge in a while. And the curse is kind of considered unofficially broken, right? But maybe we can change that. The curse of Tippecanoe, or Tecumseh's curse, that decreed that presidents of the United States, elected or re-elected, in years divisible by 20, would drop dead. That's the curse. So far, the curse has taken out William Henry Harrison, who was elected in 1840, Abe Lincoln, of course, who was elected in 1860, James Garfield, 1880, William McKinley, 1900, Warren Harding, 1920, Franklin Roosevelt, 1940, and John F. Kennedy, who was elected in 1960. Now, Ronald Reagan, who was elected in 1980, was shot but survived, and George W. Bush survived a few assassination attempts as well. So you can't win them all, I guess. that's just our luck, right? The curse was originally cast against William Henry Harrison by Tenskwatawa, the brother of Shawnee chief Tecumseh, after the elder brother was killed in a battle near Tippecanoe. Since 1963, no president has died in office. That is when Kennedy was assassinated. But I mean, I say dream big. It's so cruel, but whatever. We've got an election this year, 2020, a year that is already chock full of some wild, kooky, and scary energy. So I'm wondering if maybe it's time for some of us to reach out to Tecumseh, to Tenskwatawa, and get this curse juiced up, you know? This is like the meanest thing I've ever said about a human being, but I don't care because Trump is a garbage person. You know, I actually live, like, the main road near my apartment is Tecumseh Road. Maybe I should leave a little note at the crossroads of Tecumseh Road and just kind of ask them to, you know, to bring back this classic curse. Just saying. So when it comes to baneful magic in modern witchcraft, there are two directions to look in. One is at the originators of Wicca, so, you know, your Gerald Gardner and your Doreen Valiente. and the other is hoodoo practices of enslaved black people in the southern United States. The OG Wiccans actually didn't, you know, they didn't have big opinions about curses, though the people who would later interpret those works really did. It became more of a topic later. So the Wiccan Reed is a poem written by Doreen Valiente that offers advice to witches working toward casting spells. And you can find various versions of it online, but the important part of it is 8 words the Wiccan Reed fulfill, and it harm none, do what ye will. In other words, as long as you're not causing harm to others with magic, cast on. This really is just another version of the most ancient and basic ethical law that humans have, which is, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as they would do unto you, first do no harm, the laws of karma in Hinduism. Some Wiccans read this as an absolute law, while others see it as a more general ethical guideline. When I began studying Wicca, it was the rule, you know, it was the rule of three. If you do negative or black magic, negative and black energy will come back upon you. This became blended over time with the New Agey concept of manifestation and the law of attraction. And it got really, like, literal, where good magic begets good things and bad magic begets bad things. You know, if you focus on the negative for any minute, you attract more negativity to you. As such, curses and hexes obviously weren't taught to anybody, and they weren't really mentioned. Again, it became, you know, this isn't something anyone actually does. This is fairy tale stuff, right? This is in stark contrast to the practices of hoodoo. For those new to magic, I've noticed that I have a lot of listeners lately that are very, very new to magic. Hoodoo is a kind of folk magic created by black people in the southern U.S., mainly around the Mississippi Delta. Folk magic is the magic of the people. You know, it's almost always used and created by the downtrodden, the oppressed, and the forgotten of society. Wicca is not a folk magic. It's more ceremonial. You know, there's more necessary ritual objects that you have to buy. In general, it was, at the time, elite, white, and wealthy. This distinction is really important. Curses, hexes, jinxes, and magic for purposes of revenge or domination, banishing, and even causing sickness and death are all found in hoodoo. And even in modern times, they continue to be a big part of the practice. The reason for this, of course, is that those practicing creating hoodoo had genuine, justified need of that kind of magic. Those wealthy, original Wiccans, they were privileged to not need to curse anybody. But when you are enslaved, oppressed, treated inhumanely, and living in a place that is scary and foreign to you, you need different resources. To this day, I've noticed that books and work about hoodoo and this branch of magic that are written by white practitioners are less likely to feature so much of the cursing and the hexing. Yet again, this is, you know, just a privilege of being white in our society. If you've never considered casting a curse, never felt you needed that kind of magic, that's a good thing. That means that you had other resources and tools to get through your hardships. But this is not true for everyone. At the core of casting curses and hexes in hoodoo is justification and righteousness. You have to be able to justify the use of that magic to yourself. Maybe even to your God. Your anger or your pain needs to be righteous. The people who created hoodoo were full of righteous anger. How could something negative bounce back on you in that case? You know, the idea that all negativity will bounce right back. Is self-defense not justifiable, not a justifiable action? It's not something petty. You know, you don't need to curse the jerk who broke your heart because you are sad. But maybe you do need to curse the jerk who sexually assaulted you, who destroyed your career, who victimized you or your family. I mean, just like any other type of modern witchcraft, cursing requires some introspection and a serious conversation with yourself. But self-defense, defending yourself, getting justice, those are important. And if that's something you need to do, nothing's going to bounce back on you. As I said, this is a topic that I've been researching and reading a lot about this year. I've had a hard time finding modern books written about baneful magic in a practical way. And indeed, every single one of them leaned heavily on hoodoo practices. Utterly Wicked by Dorothy Morrison is hoodoo heavy, but that's not shocking because she's from Texas, right? She's hoodoo is the magic that's there. And another book on cursing that I tracked down called Cursing and Crossing is written by Miss Aida, who is a hoodoo practitioner. That book was put out by Lucky Mojo Curio Co. a few years ago, so it was kind of hard to find a copy, and the one I ordered, just because of postal problems, didn't get here in time for this episode. So keep a lookout for that. But Miss Aida rocks, and she has a new book out right now called Hoodoo Cleansing and Protection Magic that looks excellent. That one was put out by Wiser, so it'll be easier to find, and you'll be able to find an ebook version. I did find a recording from Lucky Mojo's old podcast featuring Miss Aida when they put out the book talking about cursing and crossing. And it was super, super interesting of an interview. So I will put the link for that in the description for this episode as well for those who want to listen in and find out a little bit more. Knowing what I know about Wicca and about hoodoo, I'm not particularly shocked that most of the modern info on baneful magic is from that. But it did make me wonder, why isn't there anything else, anything new? And I mean, hoodoo works. Let's say that right now. That's real magic that definitely works for people. Why mess with something that works, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it is very telling to me that even white writers who write about curses are kind of regurgitating this magic made by Black people to face a form of oppression we couldn't necessarily understand, and using it for their own purposes. Now, I'm not saying anything negative about any of the writers I've mentioned, by the way. I think this is just something that we were never really encouraged to think about before. We are so much more conscious of race and cultural appropriation than ever before. We're going through a time of serious societal change, and spirituality is going through its own corresponding changes. What I've been thinking is we need new curses, brand new, wholly original recipes, invocations, correspondences, tools, herbs, crystals, you know, whatever. We really have come into an era of magic and witchcraft where fighting for yourself and for your community, social justice, is a main component of our motivations and practices. Revolutionary and socially minded magic are sprouting up everywhere. We've also begun to see how damaging chronic positivity can be, and have started to dismantle that. You know, we've begun to remove some of the stigma of feeling afraid, angry, bitter, hurt, or vulnerable, or even traumatized. Witches no longer live in this separate pagan little world. You know, witches are really integrated with the world. We need to continue to create new magic that helps us, you know, change the world in ways that we want to see. One thing I noticed when reading Utterly Wicked is that many of the spells worked on an individual level. and often tended to, so to speak, treat the symptom versus the disease. So, for example, a spell to hex a boss that was sexually harassing you. This is great. Hex that motherfucker, for sure. But what about the other people in the office affected by his behavior? What about other victims? What about a potential culture of sexual harassment within a company or even an industry? You know, another way to think of it is that hexing a bad cop is great, but it doesn't do anything about all the other cops and the culture of racism and sexism and brutality within the entire industry of policing. You see, again, this is, we are just living in a time of greater connection to a global community. This is why I want to talk about this, about baneful magic. This is why I want to find more about it. I want to read things about it. We live in an era where we can use this magic to change the world, to change the lives of others, and to change our own lives. This kind of magic can enact widespread justice and individual healing. If you're angry right now at the state of the world, that anger is probably justified. If you're angry about living in a rape culture, that is some justified anger. If you're angry about living through yet another new Jim Crow, that is justified anger. If you're sick and tired of living in a world where you are oppressed, where you're abused, harmed, pushed aside, left to rot in the gutter, you know, all of those feelings are justified. So let's get practical. I know from experience that anxiety, fear, and depression can keep you from manifesting your most magical life on the best of days, and which is, these days are not the best. That's why if you're struggling or feeling lost, I want you to consider reaching out to a professional licensed therapist through BetterHelp. Within 24 hours, they'll assess your needs and match you with a therapist that is specially trained to deal with everything from depression and anxiety to grief, conflicts at home, and even sexuality and gender across the spectrum. It's all online, so there's no awkward social distancing in the waiting room. You're in the comfort and safety of home. You can message your therapist anytime and schedule weekly audio or video chat sessions. The service is available worldwide. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and they offer financial aid to those who need it. Lately, so many people have been reaching out that BetterHelp is actually recruiting more counselors in all 50 states right now. I want you to manifest the life of your dreams, starting today. As a listener, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/fatfeministwitch. When it comes to baneful magic, there are a few different categories and, you know, even subcategories. Isn't that exciting? So first we have the names. Curse, hex, jinx, bind, and crossing. These terms can all really be used interchangeably and can mean just magic to bring misfortune or some sort of negative consequences to another party, to a target. Technically, a jinx is less serious, like an inconvenience. A hex is a little more intense and usually wishes for overall and general misfortune in their life as a response to whatever they've done. A curse usually means causing direct harm to an individual or a family and is seen as much more severe. That's the big one, right? Bindings are meant to stop or to trap a person. And then crossing or crossed conditions is what this branch of magic is often called in hoodoo. And it means that you are blocked or stopped. Something is interfering. Uncrossing is the type of magic that, of course, reverses that curse. Then we have different purposes, like domination, banishing, blocking roads, hounding, which is sending a malevolent or an avenging spirit after somebody. Infecting, which can be physical, like causing an illness, or emotional, like causing extreme obsession in a curse to do with love or relationships. Reversing or bouncing a curse back at a caster. And of course, death conjure, which is exactly what it sounds like. Ancestral curses can really be any of those, right? It can be any sort of category. But the curse is then passed down through generations until it can be broken, either by, you know, fulfilling some ultimate penance or using magic to remove the curse. You can even further divide this type of magic by methodology. So, like, there's candle spell curses. There's curses using biological material like urine or blood. There's foot track magic to get someone to, you know, leave. There's mirror magic, bottle and jars, root work. It's a much larger and cooler topic than I was aware of. Much larger and cooler. I mentioned earlier that I have a whole series of episodes exploring this topic planned over the next year or so, and I will hopefully be diving into some of these categories and stuff in depth. The next episode in the series, which will not necessarily be the next episode of the podcast, but the next episode in this series will be about protection and warding against harm or even other baneful magic that is cast against you. I'm also working on an episode all about domination magic. I don't know how far off I am here, but I wondered if there are any sex witches out there who use domination magic in a sexual context. You know, do magic and BDSM ever blend together? And I know this is weird, but I wondered if, like, magical domination could be a kink. Like, it would be incredibly niche, of course, but imagine, like, a really cool dominatrix witch casting curses on a client as part of their, you know, their agreement. Forgive me, I'm not super well-versed on BDSM, sorry. But this is just something that I've been thinking of as I've been, you know, researching the overall topic of curses. A lot of people find BDSM very empowering. And for someone who's been victimized, domination magic can also be very empowering. So I'm just putting it out there that if this is a topic that you know anything about, if this is part of your practice, or, you know, if you use any sort of magic or witchcraft in your work as a sex worker, I would love to hear about it. Likewise, if any of you work closely with St. Martha the Dominator, Santa Marta Dominadora, and would like to talk to me about that relationship and how you began that particular type of work for the same episode on domination magic, I am all ears. I'm actually going to put a contact form on my website at thefatfeministwitch.com where you can contact me specifically about this topic. I've got so many cool ideas for this series that I'm working on. And it's just because I can't stop reading about it. You know, I can't stop looking for things. I can't stop trying to track down books. And it's fun. I'm really into it. I'm diving in here. So, getting back to the practical stuff, creating a curse. How do you do that? Honestly, it's not any different than creating any other type of spell. It's all about your correspondences, your intention and energy. You work with the energies of the lunar cycles and astrological days and times. You can call on spirits or deities if you do that, that have the power to aid your cause. You gather herbs or materials or curios or crystals, and they bring in the energy that you need. And then you get that energy out there in some way with the casting. I think the main difference between how I create a curse and how I create any other spell is that I really do put more time and a little bit more ceremony into the creation and casting of a curse. I'm not likely to just create it off the top of my head and cast it without thinking, you know? I'll take a ritual bath or a shower, or I can use, you know, smoke to cleanse myself. I make sure to ground, and I use something for protection, like a crystal, or a visualization, or a mirror. And I'll use divination or meditation to get very clear on my intention. It always seems, you know, just a little bit extra, but it's all just to show dedication and reverence for what I'm doing. After casting a curse, it's self-care time to the max. Like, I might take a whole ass other bath that's a little more calm and way more fragrant and bubbly. I'll have a snack to ground myself in my body. I'll pull out the journal and I'll write about how I feel, anything that I experienced, you know. And I remember that that next step after the curse is healing from the cause or aftermath of that situation. You know, maybe it's time to seek a therapist, talk to a friend, change your medication, you know, whatever it is. Timing-wise, the prime times for baneful magic are Tuesdays and Saturdays. Times when the moon is in Scorpio, Aries, Libra, or Capricorn, or during those, you know, astrological seasons or planetary hours. And then during the dark slash new and waning phases of the moon. Though all moon phases can contribute different energy to any spell that you are casting. Tuesdays and the sign of Aries are aligned with the planet Mars, which is all about fire, anger, war, passion, and action. Saturdays and Capricorn are ruled by the planet Saturn, which is the taskmaster of the zodiac. It rules boundaries, limitations, poisonous plants, and karma. Libra is the astrological sign of justice and balance, and it's ruled by Venus, which makes it a pretty good time for anything legal, social justice related, and love spells. Scorpio, of course, is ruled by Pluto, the planet of death. This is our occult sex transformation, deep dark shadow sign. The dark or new moon is pretty self-explanatory. You know, it's the darkest time of the month. But the waning moon is great for curses that intend to take something away from your target. Likewise, the waxing moon can help you heap misfortune onto them. Look for tools like candles and crystals and symbols in black, red, or white. Black candles, fabric, stones, paint, paper, pens, markers, all of these are indispensable in this line of witch work. Likewise, black clothes. Black is used not only for sending out this hexy energy, but also creating barriers, offering protection, and cleansing negative energy from your own life and space. Red symbolizes those Martian qualities like passion, anger, war, action, lust. You know, the matters of, I say heart, but the heart too. Also blood. I use red incenses like dragon's blood and an ink made from the resin, red candles, and also red envelopes. To me, red is startling and like a symbol of danger, you know, stop right there. So I have these small red envelopes, and years ago, I used them to conceal things that were triggering or painful. I started with pictures. So they were photographs of people that I didn't want to let go of, their memories from a time that I eventually wanted to think about, but I didn't want to look at them. So I sealed them in just this little red envelope and didn't look at them again until it was time. I still do this sometimes without even really thinking about it, and I've done things like put in letters or something that someone has given me that I don't want to look at, but I don't want to get rid of yet. Or letters that, you know, I've written therapeutically, I'll put that in there. White is, of course, multi-purpose, but also cleansing, purifying, protective, and enlightening. I'm a big fan of petition papers or writing my intentions, candles and incense, burning something away. I love to burn stuff when it comes to cursing. I love vinegar jars, jars filled with vinegar and caustic materials. Iron and metal objects, so coffin nails and railroad spikes, two things I very much love. And I also you know, I take care to dispose of curses at crossroads, down a sewer, or if it's safe and it's just something kind of small and biodegradable, flush it down the toilet. Mm, love flushing it down the toilet. That is just like, ain't shit, but magic. I'm into it. Caustic materials are really, really good for curses. So these are your bleach, vinegar, ammonia, lemon juice, and yes, pee. It's not curses if there's no pee. So word to the wise, though. You saw this post going around on Facebook. Pee contains ammonia. And if you mix it with the bleach, it will create mustard gas. So don't do that. When it comes to those caustic materials, I don't often think you need like more than one. Like, I think pee is enough. Vinegar is enough, you know? But pee is very useful. Urine is very, I should say urine, like I'm an adult. It's very personal to you. You know, it's expelled from you, which fits the symbolism of getting rid of something very well. And it will destroy whatever it is you put in the urine, like paper with your enemy's name on it. It'll eat away at it because of the acid. Rotten and disgusting things also work. So this ranges from the benign, like a suggestion I once saw on Tumblr for using bong water because it's smelly and putrid. I love that. And then there are curses using poo, using feces, and even rotten food, maggots, freshly dead things. I'm gonna be honest, I don't fuck much with that. And even just like, oh, even just thinking about it really bums me out. Pee's one thing. Come on, this is pee. Bong water makes me laugh, but I do love the ingenuity. But anything more than that, and I honestly don't have the stomach for it. And I'm very fortunate that I've never felt the need to cast a curse that is so extreme as to need poo, maggots, or freshly dead animals. I'm very excited that I've never had to do that. There we go. Now, crossing and uncrossing, cursing and crossing, sorry, by Miss Aida does have an entire chapter on poo, according to, I gotta stop saying it like this. I gotta be a grown up. It does have entire chapters on some of these more gross ideas and where they came from and how they work and why people still use them, you know? So I'm going to be pretty excited to learn more about that, to be honest, even though it's not something I want to do. Some slightly less gross ways to bring in animal spirit magic rather than roadkill are things like ethically collected bones, using porcupine quills for carving candles, which I do. Again, no porcupine had to be killed for me to get those. It was dead, it was given a proper burial, and the quills were collected. You can also include things like shed snakeskin, or cat or dog fur, or whiskers in some way. You can also, you know, work with an animal familiar, or work with an animal spirit to help, you know, just enact your spell. Black cat fur can be used to hex others and, you know, bring them the bad luck. Or if you are someone with a black cat or witchy familiar that sheds fur and whiskers all the time, those shed fur and whiskers have, you know, like guardian, protector energy. Dried chicken feet can be made into protective talismans, and these are kind of neat. There's definitely a rabbit's foot type of ethical quandary there, of course, but basically it's a chicken foot that is dried, painted, often black or red, and decorated with feathers and symbols and charms to offer protection or to block bad magic from being used against you. I've met hoodoo practitioners who make these, and I will say that they are works of art and imbued with real magic. Super interesting. Mirrors are one of my favorite magical tools in general, but mostly for curses and protective magic. You use mirrors to bounce energy back to someone, to show them, you know, their evil from a different perspective, make them see the monster they've become. and also to bounce prying eyes away from you or your home, like privacy. Broken mirror shards are a powerful item to bring misfortune or physical harm. You know, there's those 7 years of bad luck from a broken mirror. Pick up those shards, keep them for 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, they've no longer, you know, got any power. But in the meantime, you've got a pretty good, sharp, nasty thing to add into any sort of curses. But anything sharp, really, can be used. So, you know, rose thorns are one of my favorites. The broken glass, knives, nails, pins, spikes, screws, all of them. Coffin nails used to come from actual coffins, but times have changed. Now, coffin nails are rusty nails that have been sitting in graveyard dirt and no doubt holy water in a dark cellar or something until they rust, they cure. Which, of course, means you can make your own coffin nails. Very fun. Railroad spikes are also rusty iron, but these can be found along most train tracks. They routinely pop out of place from, you know, the force of the trains on the tracks, and are often just left there while a new spike is put in to hold the track in place. Man, I walked around a train yard and I found 50 in like one day. They're mainly used for protection, to anchor yourself to your home, keeping the law and landlords away. You know, if you rent your property, this helps you from losing that rental, from being kicked out. So they can also be used to curse those types of individuals. Cursing landlords, I'm all about it. These two items come from hoodoo. But any rusty iron is a great protective tool. You know, there's rusty horseshoes bring fortune to the home. But iron is the part that matters. In Europe, it's believed that the fae folk, the fairies, were allergic to iron. So carrying some with you would protect you from being taken, from being tricked, or hurt by the fairies. Iron scrapings can be added to powders, potions, incense blends, paints, waters, you name it, for all manner of cursing or protective magic. When it comes to crystals, of course, the black ones will be the first ones that you reach for. Your obsidian, black kyanite, tourmaline, onyx, jet, hematite, they're all fantastic. These black stones direct this type of energy, and they're also very protective. They absorb negative energy. You know, I keep this nice big black obsidian in my living room to kind of absorb negative energy that might be floating around. Some of these, like the obsidian, also help you communicate with spirits and ancestors and protect you from negative entities, negative spirits. Obsidian, my favorite, and I've said the word so many times now it's losing meaning, is often carved into mirrors, knives, and spearheads that are all very good in baneful magic. In general, getting some of those nice raw pieces with the sharp edges are really good for this kind of thing. You can use birthstones to represent a particular person. You can use red stones like carnelian or fire agate to bring in those fiery qualities. You know, grab things with sharp points, crystal wands, crystals to personalize the energy as well. You know, you don't just need to have your spooky crystals. If the curse is related to love or sex, use pink tourmaline or rose quartz to make it clear that it is a heart-focused spell. Even though they don't have that curse energy, they have that kind of qualifying energy. Then we have the plants. The sketchy herbs. The most obvious magical type of plant to reach for in baneful magic is something baneful. So poisonous plants like wolfsbane, aconite, belladonna, deadly nightshade, Datura, Mandrake, Henbane, you know, these are all super dope. Super, super, super dope. I wish I could speak more in depth about the use of these amazing poisonous plants in magic and curses, but I am unfortunately not experienced enough. This is another topic on which I'd like to have a guest who can explain it to us further. But the one thing I can say is I am not in any way advocating that you straight up poison a bitch. I'm not saying that. Don't do that. That's not what I'm about. But to use those plants in a curse could mean that you include the plant matter in your spell. So, you know, you have a candle or a mojo bag and you used dried plants there. You can make a spiritual connection with the plant itself. You can do that by growing it, by using the essence, using a flying ointment that's created by a professional, getting close to the plant, meditating with it, all those different ways. Another class of plant that works really well for curses is carnivorous plants. So these are Venus flytraps and pitcher plants or nepenthes. These are the most common here in North America, at least. I've definitely used pitchers from my plant in curses before. I love it. They slowly eat away at things, right? These plants, they conceal things, they catch things, they lure in these nasty bugs and then turn them into food so that they can grow humongous. My nepenthes is huge. It's almost as tall as I am, and it just sprouted babies from the bottom. I'm psyched about it. I really like respect the whole vibe of carnivorous plants. Likewise, if you want to foster obsession and attraction, these are the plants for you, right? Venus, the Venus flytrap, a bit better for anything of a love or sexual type of nature. But these are slightly overlooked, and maybe I'm biased because I just think they're very cool and have a nepenthes. I highly recommend using them. I love them. They have very, very cool, weird, primal type energy. Interesting. Next is herbs ruled by the signs and planets that I mentioned earlier. Many poisonous plants are ruled by Saturn, but so is mugwort, tobacco, cypress, mullein, and petunias. Especially some wild purple petunias. Very cool. Anything sharp like cacti, thorny plants, thistles, things with arrow-shaped leaves, very dark bark or leaves, like those plants that almost look, where the bark almost looks black. Vines like morning glory, anything psychedelic properties. Morning glory seeds do have mild psychedelic properties. Fun fact. Hot plants, so chili pepper, black peppercorn, cinnamon, cayenne, thyme, rue, and stinging nettles. They're all very multi-purpose. Chili peppers are my favorite on that list. I have whole dried chilies in an old mason jar for protection in the kitchen, where I also have my kitchen salt. And I have flaked chilies, both for magic and for food, because I like spicy food. Italian charms against the evil eye look like a horn. Also like a chili pepper. So I have chilies and their symbols in various places for protection and for good luck. All of these plants give you, you know, that element of sharpness and heat and death and poison and power and danger. But often overlooked are herbs that represent other parts of your intention or that begin the healing work required after the curse is cast. Like including the pink tourmaline or rose quartz in a love curse. A lot of these plants aren't baneful or scary in nature at all. A great example is heather. Pretty little heather flowers, right? You can get dried heather flowers, pretty easy to track down. But one of the most ancient magical uses of heather is for preventing rape and sexual victimization. Straight up. So, including the heather in a hex against a rapist or abuser of this nature brings in not only that supportive energy for the survivor, but it has that very specific energy against a sexual abuser. So if you can include that both in your actual curse, if you want to, and in whatever self-care things you do after. I like to include heather flowers in a bath. So, you know, you can do your curse and then you can take a bath after to kind of wash all that away, and you can have heather flowers like in a mesh bag or something in your bath. If you were hurt with words or you want words and communication to be someone's downfall, include mercury ruled plants or something like slippery elm that's used to increase eloquence and communication skills in regular spells. Another idea is to look up the Victorian language of flowers. This is something that anyone can find and learn, but few actually do. So it might not make the impact you want, but the vibe is still there. Every flower has a meaning or a message, and sending someone certain flowers is, you know, an insult or even a curse. So flowers like narcissus, right? It's amazing. Blue lobelia and love lies bleeding, of course, are all a fuck you from the flower kingdom. So you can include those in your spell, or of course, you can send a cursed bouquet to your target. That's some Martha Stewart magic right there, and I fully support it. Once you have your intention, you've been talking to yourself, you feel justified in your action, you can find out what kind of ingredients you need and what kind of spell to cast. Candle spells are my favorite, and there's nothing like a black candle dressed in spicy oils and peppers and, you know, stuck with coffin nails. A skull-shaped candle is even better. I use carving to direct the spell or tie it to a specific target, and when the candle burns down, I dispose of the remnants of the spell in a garbage can away from my house, usually late at night while I walk and reflect on the spell. I do a lot of thinking when I walk. I like to have, at the very least, photos of my target. If it's a specific person or a company or something, you know, if I know exactly where I'm directing it. It's even better to have dirt from their property or a lock of hair of if it's an individual person or a sweaty shirt left behind. If you somehow have their urine, that's fantastic, but I don't want to know how you got it. Oh, a used pregnancy test. That's actually, that just popped into my head. Brilliant. Anyways, you want to have something that makes it clear where you're directing the spell. Another one that I've done is I have made a black dream pillow to send nightmares to someone before. So I included dream magic herbs and make sure some Saturn herbs outweighed any other. So it had a lot of mullein and etc. in it. I included a petition paper inside of like a general overview of the type of nightmare that I want them to have. If you can use a coffin nail to like affix this like to the bottom of their bed out of sight, oh, that's even better. But that's not always possible. Otherwise, you'll have to put the pillow underneath your own pillow at nighttime, sleep with it there, and try to project that energy. And I would hold a crystal that protects you from nightmares like citrine. A very good method of cursing is to burn shit. Burn it. It's so easy. You write a person's name on a piece of paper. You put your hate or your rage or your pain into it. You know, you really just put it in there. And you set it on fire and you throw the ashes away or you put them in the toilet and you flush it. Goodbye. Burying stuff underground or in a compost pile so it decomposes is more long term, but it's still the general idea, right? Sometimes that's what you need. You can, of course, curse your own objects, and you can get them into the person's possession, or, you know, hide them on their property. In the book The Magic of Marie Laveau, Denise Alvarado talks about front porch conjure, in which people would create a curse like a mojo bag or a doll or a box, and they would put it underneath the porch of their target. And the danger of getting caught was like kind of part of a sacrifice that you make to power the spell. I thought that was super interesting. They don't even know that it's there. You can also create what's called a witch's burr. Basically a big spiky ball of nasty shit. So like mold, dirty water, iron, wax, nails, a whole bunch of spiky, dirty, disgusting things. And then you toss it to decompose in your target's yard. Little less risky, easier to get away with, but you have to come into contact with more disgusting things. Kind of a toss-up, right? Salt is a great curse. I know that we use it for like cleansing and protection, but I mean, salting the earth, right? This meant to destroy someone's land, their crops. It was barren, no food, no prosperity, no life. Not until the earth can correct itself. What a wicked curse, you know? Create a cursed salt, like black salt, with ashes and peppercorns and iron. You can also make a salt that is specific to your target and purposes. Pour the salt either on their property or get a bowl of dirt from their property, pour the salt on top, and tuck it away out of the sunlight. You can create mojo bags for literally any purpose at all. So a little black bag filled with some of the herbs mentioned and your intention is a powerful tool. One that protects you from the target is also a powerful tool. Another one that gives you control over or freedom from the target is even better. You can, you know, whatever, get that harassing coworker fired. You can get you a new job or a promotion away from some asshole. You can make that person disappear or suddenly decide it's time to move away to another city. You can take anything that you decide is justified. Realistically, it's your curse, right? Binding can be done with ribbons, string, straps, or even ice. So you put your target into something that you can bind up. You want to completely strap your binding agent around something that represents your target. And then you can, of course, unbind it if you ever decide to. Ice in the freezer is the most simple, and it's kind of fun. So, you know, you put their name or their hair or photo, whatever, in a small little Ziploc bag with water, and you put it in the freezer. You freeze them. You do not allow them to move forward. And then you can thaw it out at your own discretion if you want. I also really like the idea of making someone like cursed muffins or something. Nothing horrifying or gross, no poison. They'd be regular muffins, mediocre muffins even, so that they don't even get to enjoy them. But you put your anger and your magic in there energetically, you know? That's not something I use for a serious matter, but a jinx for your shitbag neighbor? I love it. Mediocre muffins. Curse the homeowners association with magic muffins. I'm into it. Just going forward with the Martha Stewart. You know, put the muffins with a bouquet of flowers that you put together with nothing but offensive ones, and you've got a whole nice, fancy curse. I personally don't like to keep curses going or burning for long lengths of time. It's, you know, if this is something I'm ready to let go of, let's let go. Burn it down. Toss it in the trash. Leave it to rot. Don't look back. After that, you get your journal, you call your best friend or your therapist or your HR department or whatever, and you get some real world help for everything the magic can't handle. Or you practice some magical healing and self-care. You move forward from that place of power. As they say, a witch that can't hex can't heal. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you want to find out more about me and about the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, you can do that by going to my website, thefatfeministwitch.com. You can also find me all across social media. Just look up The Fat Feminist Witch and it will be me. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, even Pinterest. If you want to support the show, you can do that by going to my website and clicking Buy Me a Coffee. You can become a supporter on Patreon, patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch. And of course, you can buy my books, The Grimoire Journal and Green Witchcraft, which both came out this year. Thank you so much to everyone who has bought them, who's read them, who's left, you know, these wonderful reviews. It means so much to me. Thank you so, so much. I hope you all have a fantastic, fantastic weekend, possibly full of some bitchcraft, some very fun, baneful magic, or maybe just some of the healing that this magic can bring. Either way, I hope you're inspired. I hope you're inspired to create new types of spells for defense, for fighting, for revolution, for justice. I'm excited. I'm inspired. I hope you guys are too.